Shane, have you done something different with yourself? Have you always had the beard? I don't pay attention much on these them. Yeah, you quit smoking? You quit smoking, didn't you?
No, no. I quit the day that I died of cancer.
You quit eating donuts?
Oh my God, let's start the show, please.
And she said, you know, look, you don't want to eat simple carbohydrates. You want to eat the complex ones. Very confusing, and your body can't figure them out, so it doesn't keep them.
Jeremy, I think you're right. It's the beard. And welcome to another episode of the Dynasty Trades HQ podcast, brought to you by the Dynasty Football Network and DynastyFootballFactory.com. My name is Michael Sipes. You can find me on Twitter at FFBlitz, and I'm here with my partners, Jeremy Broen.
Boom, at DFF underscore Madman.
And Shane Manila.
Hey, it's DFF underscore Shane. And so right now, we got three startups going. Then tomorrow, we got the kitchen sink to dispersal.
Yeah, we do.
Jeremy's in that with myself. Waz of Twitter and Fantasy Pros fame, because he's always like top five ranker.
Yeah, everybody knows that guy.
Yeah, Waz. A couple other people I forget off the top of my head. I'm sorry. It's not like I remembered that many people. Waz, because he said something to me about it in our AAF league. And you, because you're Jeremy. And then also, there's Scott Fish. I think our Devi auction starts tomorrow. So is tomorrow Wednesday?
No, tomorrow's Tuesday. And there is so Monday. Much stuff going on.
I'm so out of it. I'm sorry. Yeah. Breaking news.
Oh, what? Did you say breaking news?
Breaking news. I'm sorry.
I was going to say there's no breaking news. But yeah, and Jeremy, you and I are in some kind of best ball thing with John Bosch. And there's like
That's
all
fun,
these,
man.
Yeah, there's all these different things going on right now. It's a very crazy time right now.
And what? Best ball is just an extra thing for fun, like just to fill time.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to like maybe get somebody some extra. If they win, they get like extra money the next year in the draft or something, the auction. It's fun, man. Bosch is a crazy guy. I like him, but he's definitely got some out-of-the-box shit that he does.
It's actually pretty cool. It's
being in leagues that he and Scott Fish and now Ryan McDowell.
Yeah.
Geez, those guys are just fucking next level. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you think, like, oh, I'm going to add a 0.5 to the tight end's receptions. Meanwhile, they've been doing that since, like, 1963.
I guess.
Just, I'm scared of kitchen sink. I'm not even going to lie to you. It's like an auction salary cap type deal that I'm probably going to suck at.
It was crazy.
I did one last year.
I did a kitchen sink.
I guess I was thinking of pigs. Sorry.
Yeah.
Kitchen sink. I'm actually excited about. I'm not. You know, the thing about Scott Fish that I forget is he's kind of the godfather of Devi. He's one of the first guys that was ever out in the public eye talking about college players, getting them before they're, you know, drafting them before they're, you know, legal, so to speak, like in the NFL. But I'm just saying he's one of the first guys to ever do it. And I remember calling him and say, "Hey, man, you're like the godfather of dynasty." He goes, "No, Devi." Let's keep it straight. It's Devi. So he's an amazing
funny
dynasty.
What?
Who's the godfather of dynasty football? Whoever, if any of our listeners know, please let me know, because I've only been playing. I think this is my going into my fifth season. I want to say.
And I started before you.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's my fifth or going into my sixth. I don't really remember, because, you know, when you get old, everything blends together.
You're not old. We're both older than you. Get out of here.
Anyone can tell us what who the originator of Dynasty was, or at least point us in the right direction. I'd love to look into that.
You're done eating your Nutella on toast, we'll let you know.
I will say this, though. The John Bosch thing that Jeremy was talking about, it is true. It's going to be an auction league, and we are drafting a best ball team in February to get $1 more in our salary cap. Next year. So this team we draft right now during the season will be playing best ball, and whoever wins gets $1 extra in their salary cap next year. That's the kind of degenerates we are. But
trash dynasty trade offer alert.
Oh, sweet. What is it? We're going to start off the show with that.
This goes out to that special someone out there. You know who you are. Damian Williams and David Njoku for Corey Davis. silence, just radio silence.
Is that on the show sheet?
No. This just came through while we were right.
One more time. Say it one more time slowly for me.
So David Njoku.
Yes. Yes.
And Damian Williams.
Yeah.
For Corith Davis. Corith is the full name for Corey Davis.
I was gonna say
it's not, but I think that's what it should be. Corith.
The funny thing is, I wish people could see Jeremy's face.
What do you think Corey's short for? Because it has to be short for something, right? Or is it just named just Corey?
No, I
Corey.
Think it's just Corey. I don't think it's short for anything.
Like Corrington.
Yeah, it's short for Paddington Bear.
Oh my God. We are so going to have to get under control when we have our guest on. We have a great guest tonight, guys, and we're going to have to really pull back.
Mr. Mark Schofield, if you don't know who he is, the godfather of quarterback guruing himself. I don't know. Shane, I like the Corey Davis side, but I think the other side is probably worth a little more right now. Like, you could sell those pieces individually for something else. But there's so many Damian Williams enthusiasts. Like, I don't think they even knew who Damian Williams was until last year. They're like, oh, my God, Damian Williams, man. Like, I mean, are you serious? I don't think that team's ever going to draft another running back. And he basically took the place of Kareem Hunt. I mean, you should draft him like the second round of startups.
Shane was trying to say this was a trash dynasty trade offer, and you're talking, oh, what? A real trade? Okay, what's the trade alert?
I hope it's a real trade.
This isn't on the show sheet either, but this is also a trade that spun off that Damian Williams brings to mind. So,
oh, my God.
Williams for the 112, 2019 112.
Damian Williams or the 112?
Yes.
I'm going 112. I don't give a shit about Damian Williams. I'm sure he's going to be good. Maybe this year, you know, he'll probably be. He could be a very good running back this year and then disappear. I don't care. And they might draft a running back. There's too many things. I want the 112 because I think I'm going to get a better player than Damian Williams at that spot. Thank you very much.
And someone brought this up, and I forget which podcast it was because I listen to a lot. Maybe, sure.
Our guys at Superflex brought this up.
Oh, hey.
We'll give them credit. So they brought
when
up.
When I was on the show, I'm saying, for real.
You know, Damian Williams, it's not like they turned to him immediately. He wasn't even choice 1A. He would have been 1A.
Ware, they had the other guy there.
Ware. Darrell Williams. And then Damian Williams was B. And yes, he looked very good. And I will say he looked very good. But he also is, 27 years old. And he hadn't produced ever before last season.
Yeah, and what was really sad was I grabbed him in like every league that week that Kareem got arrested, or not arrested, but got kicked off. And then Damian Williams did nothing that week. So then the next week I dropped him in every league.
And then
he blew up. So I got screwed with that.
Nobody knew that would happen. I mean, you know, a running back in that system, they're going to get some work. It's catered to. That's a point that I think Zach Eriason was making this week. Oh, running backs don't matter to an extent. Well, they do matter if you have a good one,
correct?
Rather than a shitty one. But you know, in the short term, any running back starting for a good team that uses running backs, it doesn't matter who the guy is if you find a guy that works. Yeah. There's too many nuances to that to make that a statement and stand behind it, because Kareem Hunt is clearly a better running back than Damian Williams and clearly was better on the Kansas City Chiefs than Damian Williams. People are like, oh, well, this is a new starting running back. I doubt it.
Well, we've said
Zach Eriason. Is that the scary kid from Children of the Corn?
Children of
the. Oh my God,
Malachi.
No, we have talked a lot about. You're right. I mean, running backs. It's all about opportunity, not about talent. You know, week 10, week 7, week 9. Who knows? You'll have another starting running back. But you know
that's the guys that own Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, right? Nick mm-hmm. Chubb, Saquon Barkley. You tell it to those guys and make them understand that running backs don't matter. And to the guys that draft them at the top of the startups every year. Yeah. I mean, they do matter.
But there's only a handful of them that do matter. So, we mentioned it a couple different times, but we have an awesome guest tonight, and he's going to talk to us a lot about quarterbacks. So we have a lot of questions about quarterbacks coming into this rookie draft, coming into next year, but the ones that did this year. So before we bring him in, because I know he's waiting for us, let's hear from gtbets.eu, and then we'll bring Mark Schofield in.
Are you looking for some action on today's games? Then head over to gtbets.eu for all your sports betting needs. Get up-to-date odds covering all major sports. GTBets.eu is easy to use. Their simple registration process will have you placing your first bet in minutes. And if you register today, you can earn up to $500 of free money. Now that's a great reason to head over to GTBets.eu, an official sponsor of the Dynasty Football Factory. Simply add Dynasty Trades HQ in the referred by field to earn a 100% welcome bonus. GTBets.eu, it's game time.
Yeah, missing gambling. I'm going to start putting money down on chess. third tier chess games.
Yeah, you're gonna. Do they have betting on chess on there? What about
no? I actually just go to local schools and put money down on it.
Maybe eventually you'll be able to bet on some AAF stuff. You know,
I like the AAF.
Yeah, that would be good. AAF. Speaking of that, we have our guest. He's in the room now. We just came back out of GT Bets, and we have our guest here, Mark Schofield, at Mark Schofield on Twitter. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing fantastic, gentlemen. Pleasure to be with you this fine Monday evening.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
It's Monday. That's right.
Yeah, I know. All the days kind of blend into the next. Welcome to the show. Do you want to let everybody know where they can find you, what you're doing, who you are, all that kind of stuff?
Best way to find me is at Mark Schofield on Twitter. Like you said, I write for a bunch of different places: Inside the Pylon, Pro Football Weekly, The Score, Matt Waldman's Rookie Scouting Portfolio, Big Blue View, part of the SB Nation. I've written pieces over Football Guys, a bunch of other different places, and I host the Locked On Patriots podcast. And we were talking before we hit record, I dropped my first AAF piece over at InsideThePylon.com. People are trying to get behind the AAF. I know Evan Silver's trying to get fantasy leagues to get popping over on AAF stuff. So yeah, doing a lot of work, getting ready for the draft. And I know we're going to talk about some quarterback stuff, which is the bulk of the work that I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's funny. The AAF thing, we were talking about that before we came on here. That's why we just mentioned that coming out of GT Bets. And I know you said this was the first time you put out an article about it?
It was. During the NFL season, I was doing something over for The Score where we called it by design. I would break down the best pass play, run play, interception, sack. So I kind of did something like that. I'm going to kind of be working through the framework as the season goes on. But I figured, why not? You know, people are talking about it. We've got, a couple of months until the draft. So people are starting to talk about the AAF. People are watching it. And so why not? I mean, might as well get some cheap and easy clicks, you know?
Was Charles Johnson the MVP of the week? I know he had a really good
highest score.
I awarded game balls to him, Jalen Marshall, and Garrett Gilbert, the quarterback and the two wide receivers from the Orlando. Our Orlando Apollos, that is the adopted team that I've adopted here.
They're
2-0
now?
2-0. You got the head ball coach taking shots at Tennessee in the post-game interview, saying that the San Antonio Stadium arena was just as loud, if not louder, as Tennessee, which I thought was amazing. So they had a nice little comeback. A lot of comeback wins this week. I say a lot. There were four games and three of them.
Exactly.
Still, three out of the four, right?
Yeah. I drafted Jalen Marshall. I was pretty happy with his performance the first 2 weeks. Got a little lucky there.
He looks pretty good so far. I mean, the head ball coach, they're going to be slanted it a little bit. Gilbert threw for almost 400 yards. I mean, Hackenberg would love to have a season like that in the AAF.
Sure.
Where did Gilbert come from? Because he's like 32, right? But
Tech guy. He bounced around the league. He was with New England for a while. I think he played with Carolina for a bit, probably. Maybe, some German league overseas for a little bit. Maybe that Italian league that, Michael Grisham wrote about, John Grisham wrote about. He wrote about an Italian football league in one of his books called Playing for Pizza. So, he was bouncing around for a while. I think I played against him in a flag football league 2 years ago.
Really?
No.
You played quarterback, didn't you?
Does what I did actually count as playing? It's more of an attempt, and it was Division III, so it barely counts.
I mean, that counts. It counts.
Man, because I didn't attempt.
Will say this. My school, Wesleyan, we were 1-0 in games in which I was a starting quarterback. Now, I get pulled midway through the third quarter after throwing my second pick, and our starter, who could barely walk because he had blown up his ankle, Kurt Schilling style, comes back in, throws two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and we won. So, yes, we were 1-0 in games in which I was a starter, but had nothing to do with me.
The team rallied around you or rallied till they got you off the field. And either way, they rallied.
They rallied. The joy in the huddle as I was unceremoniously booted from it was almost palpable. I mean, you could see it in everybody's eyes, the sheer gleam and twinkles of joy as they watched me walk back to the sidelines.
So, yeah. I commend you for trying that and doing that. That's awesome, man. So many people don't go for things like that.
Hey, you know, gave me some stories to tell the grandkids someday.
What year was that? When did you do that?
Do we have to do that?
No, we don't have to do that.
We hired him because he asks the tough questions.
Well, I graduated from college in 1999. I'm a man. I'm 41.
Oh, well, I graduated like 10 years before you, so.
Shane and I are in our 40s.
Yeah. Hey,
Mike graduated so long ago from high school, they didn't even call it high school. It was just school.
All right, well, let's jump to the future and let's talk about this 2019 rookie class, all the babies that are coming into the NFL right now. So with you, with your website, with everything that you write about and everything, who do you like in this 2019 rookie quarterback class?
I like the 2020 quarterback class.
Unfortunately,
it's an interesting question, Michael, because look, for years, you know, doing this and studying quarterbacks, I feel like, you know, as a former quarterback, I often joke that I'm like the card carrying member of the quarterback union where, you know, you guys know every draft cycle, we like these guys in August and it gets to be like March and we hate them and can't wait to talk about the next class. But I feel like, you know, every draft season I'm the guy, you know, others like Matt Waldman, you know, we pick up the sword and the shield and we defend the honor of the quarterback class. And we say, no, these guys are really good. You're selling them short. And when everybody like 2 years ago was excited about Sam Darnold coming out, we were like, no, Mahomes, you know, he's good. And Deshaun Watson, he's good. It's harder to do it this year because you look at this quarterback group, you know, even you take the four guys supposedly at the top, and they're not even my top four, but it seems to be the consensus top four of Haskins and Murray and Locke and Jones. Mm-hmm. There's a question mark on each of these guys, and perhaps big question marks on each of these guys. And so it's a difficult class to evaluate. And, you know, so I understand why there are some people, there are some even organizations like Miami that are basically saying, we'll see you next year. Mm-hmm. You know, forget it. Like we're just out on this group. And you could even make the case that with the move that the Broncos just made, maybe their plan, and look, we've got a guy we like, maybe it's just one, but if we can't get him, we're out until 2020. So you can see some of the NFL teams starting to align with some of the draft media, you know, fantasy world thought process on these quarterbacks. Now, that being said, while there are question marks with a lot of these guys, there are still some redeemable qualities with some of them too. Some things where, you know, you can point to and say they do this, this guy does this well, or this guy does that well. And if they get themselves into the right situation, it will translate. So, you know, we could start, say, with Haskins. And he's probably your prototypical pocket quarterback in this class. You know, you look at some of the things that he does, you know, he can make most of the throws to all levels with pretty good accuracy. There are some times when he misses some opportunities. What I really like about him and studying him, and one of my favorite games to study for him, was the Purdue game where they lost and he threw it 73 times. And you see the sort of competitive toughness. They're down by multiple scores in the fourth quarter and he's still going out there making plays. And what I like from him is, and this isn't just the Purdue game, but overall, the thought process, the mental side. You can see him doing things pre-snap, pointing out linebackers, changing the protection, the kinds of things you want NFL quarterbacks to do. And I feel like on all of my notes on him, each play that's like great read, great decision, love the thought process. Sometimes the execution just isn't there. He's missing guys that are open and things like that. But I like the mental side to him. With the other guy that's probably QB1 for some, maybe, Kyler Murray, it's almost the opposite. Mm-hmm. I love the results from him. Yeah. But you do wonder if the process is going to translate to the National Football League. And this has nothing to do with the size. This has nothing to do with the frame, the height. Put that aside for the second.
Just football, yeah.
Just the football stuff. I wonder if, you know, I did a video recently for Matt's RSP where it was a red zone play, 33-yard touchdown run against Army. And he outruns everybody. He erases every angle. Like four Army defenders had the exact angle to tackle him. But he just outruns everybody.
Yeah,
it's
textbook
like,
tackling and still.
Yeah. this works Saturday. Does it work Sunday? And so that's the question. And ultimately, whichever one of those guys I have, one or two, it's going to come down to do I want the process to be right or the results to matter? And so that's those two guys. And then there's Locke and Jones. Locke, I think, had a nice week down in Mobile. He kind of lived up to some of the pre-Senior Bowl buzz. You can tell that the footwork is getting better. He's a big arm type guy. I think if you're going to be a more downfield passing team, he kind of fits. So I think he's kind of lived up to the hype, but I'm not sure. 10th overall, I don't know if I'd be doing that if I were John Elway. And I think he's more of a late first round, early second round type guy who's going to get pushed up boards because quarterbacks get pushed up boards. I think he's okay. You know, he doesn't blow me away, but he has the arm. You know, NFL teams are going to like that. Then there's Daniel Jones, who I'm doing the Homer Simpson gif backslided into the bushes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
You know, and as a Patriots guy, look, we just saw Kuiper walk him to the Pats at 32. And even at 32, I don't know about that, because the Senior Bowl was the absolute ideal situation for him in my mind, because he looks to be a West Coast-type quarterback, accurate in the short area. His decision-making seems to be the best on those types of concepts. He's going to be down there in Mobile running John Gruden's offense, Mr. West Coast himself, yeah. And he just had an underwhelming week. And you look at his film, and yeah, on the short stuff, he looks great. The rest of it, it looks shaky. You don't get a ton of pure West Coast offenses anymore. You're going to be asked to do a bunch of different stuff. It's the bunch of different stuff that seems to fall apart from him. And so you put that together, and I'm just not sure about him.
Is Daniel Jones's upside Alex Smith?
I think you're hoping for pre-Mahomes rookie year Alex Smith. Now, that rookie year of Mahomes, you can almost say that Mahomes' influence rubbed off on Smith just as much as Smith did in Mahomes, because you saw Alex Smith be a little bit more aggressive downfield. I'm not sure that Jones even hits that year Alex Smith. I think he's more like 2 or 3 years before that Alex Smith, where it was really, I'm going to be safe, I'm going to be conservative, I'm going to check the ball down. And if you get that out of him, you're probably hitting his ceiling.
That's ugly.
Okay. Yeah, it ain't great. But what do you think? Look, just one guy's opinion, but that's where I am. I'm, like I said, I'm Homer Simpson backing into the bushes on him.
Yeah, no, that Stidham and Greer have a chance to, depending on how things go, the rest of this offseason, pro days, the combine and all of that, have a chance to maybe catch up to where they were thought of before, especially Greer at the end of his junior year, and not so much Stidham because he never really had a shot, but he was a top shelf prospect. Do you think those guys can ever surpass Jones or maybe break into that top four at all?
I think it's possible. Greer's interesting because he was the guy I was most – he and Gardner Minshew were the two I was most excited to see down in Mobile. Okay. And Greer just had sort of an underwhelming week. Right. But I think from talking to him and seeing the confidence in him and, you know, post-practice scrums where he's looking people in the eye like me and just basically saying, I'm the best quarterback in this class. I have the best arm in this class. You know, somebody asked him, are you going to throw the combine? You're right, I'm throwing at the combine. Like, good. The confidence level is there. So the competitive toughness, that side of it is there. With Greer, he's just so interested to let, you know, he's kind of like one of the ugly ducklings of this group where it never seems to look good. You know, the mechanics are off. Yeah. The lower body mechanics are off. He's got this loopy delivery at times, but sometimes it works. And there are things that he will do that he's willing to do that other quarterbacks in this class simply aren't. Like, he's willing to throw over the middle of the field. He's willing to attack between the numbers, between the hash marks. And you can't run an NFL offense numbers and outside. Drew Lock would like that because that's where he lives. But Greer is more willing to attack in the middle of the field. And so he could rise. It's just going to take one team to sort of like him. And I think Washington might be a good spot for him because they're in a weird situation where they're wondering about Smith, probably not going to be back this year given that injury. They've got Colt McCoy. They're probably not in a situation where they can get up and get one of the top guys unless there's Jones falls to them, and he might. So Greer might be an interesting fit for them. Stidham is such an interesting case because I thought before this year, if they took the training wheels off and asked him to do more in that Auburn offense, he could have a nice little season, propel himself into the first round mix. The exact opposite happened. Like, that offense was just bad. And what I thought was really interesting about Stidham down at the Senior Bowl is that if you had asked me before the week, because I actually wrote this, I forget where, but I wrote it somewhere. Trust me on that. That if you could place a bet on a guy to rise during the Senior Bowl, place it on Stidham. And he kind of had that kind of week because he looked great, looks perfect throwing in 7-on-7. He was in Kyle Shanahan's office, so he's away from that Auburn system, looked great running it. Talked to him at the end of the week, and I'm like, look, which was your favorite route concept to throw this week? And he just looked at me and laughed, and he said, all of them. And it's just basically like, I get it. You hated it last year. You kind of liking what you were doing now. I got your message.
Finally gets to play quarterback.
Gets to play quarterback and not, like, you know, whatever he was playing at Auburn. And so I think he really helped himself into that sort of day two range. if he has a nice combine and Jones continues to struggle, maybe he gets above him. Maybe. I know like Matt Miller has him as, I think, a top 50 player, or maybe just on the outside of 57 right now, last I checked. And so he's certainly moved himself up boards and helped himself down in Mobile.
Cool.
Well, you know, it's funny because with the people that listen to the show, you know, we're all talking about the 2019 class, and so many guests come on and they all say kind of the same joke you made at the beginning. Well, I like the 2020 guys, you know, and there's a small portion of people that play Devy, and more people are starting to do it. But for people that are playing Devy, and also for people that are trading their picks out this year to get picks next year, who are those quarterbacks that you do like for now for the 2020 class?
Well, 2020 is going to be interesting in that, you know, and I've said this before, I've written this piece, look, development is not linear. And, you know, I wrote this piece in March of 2017 when everybody was talking about Darnold for the 2018 draft and ignoring the Mahomes, the Watsons, the Trubiskys. And I looked at all the way too early mock drafts that we're going to get come May 15th, right?
Right.
You know, you go back to like 2021. I mean, 2011 or so. And like you saw mock drafts in, you know, that May had Landry Jones as a surefire first round prospect. Or you go through, you track these, and you've got guys like Tyler Wilson, Tyler Bray, Brad Kaya. Yep, these were guys that were going to be first round picks the year before, and the development is never there. And so everybody is excited about Tua. They're excited about Herbert. They're excited about Fields, Fromm, Eason. You know, you've got these guys coming back that we expect to take that leap, but it doesn't always pan out that way. And then you look at, you know, before that 2017 draft class, you know, I was talking up guys like, you know, Watson and Mahomes and Kaiser. And in my QB watch list that I wrote before that season started, I left off a name. That was Mitchell Trubisky. There's always a quarterback that sort of rises out of nowhere. And you can make the case of like a Minshew. Nobody was talking about Minshew. I studied 40 quarterbacks last summer to get ready for this year. Minshew wasn't on that list. I didn't study him. And so there's always somebody that sort of comes out of nowhere. And we might not know who that person is. So, you know, just if you can get a good return, you know, if you don't have to give up a ton to get next year's picks, like do it. But be careful, because we don't know how these guys are going to pan out. And some of these guys might have the kind of years that make them think, I'm better suited to stay. You know, because if you would have asked me this time last year, is Justin Herbert coming out? I said, if he has a decent enough year, this looks to be a down quarterback year, he should come out. Right. He decides to stay. And so you just be smart. You know, if you don't have to give up a ton to get one of those future rounders, then do it. But if you have to move heaven and earth to do so, don't bank on the development. So that being said, I think two is good. You know, I like him from sort of an athletic profile. Alabama's offense has really taken on more of an aerial attack as opposed to years past. And so you can tell that he's in a good position to have a sort of developmental leap that we're hoping for. So I like him. I do like Herbert. I don't think he was a surefire QB1 as others might have viewed him, but I like some of the things that he does from an anticipation standpoint. I think you see some advanced understanding of passing the football that sets him up again for having that kind of leap. Eason, Fields, Fromm, a bit more shaky on those guys. You know, we have yet to see it from Fields and being a full-time starter. It's been a while since we've seen Eason. I do think, though, he'll be an improvement over what Washington had last year. Fromm's a bit more up and down. He has his moments, and then he has other moments where he certainly seems to struggle and seems to lock on to targets early and can get fooled and can get rattled. And so I'd want to see a nice season from him before I really go all in on him. But, you know, Tua and Herbert seem to be legit. The other guy's a little bit shaky on. But again, do the cost-benefit analysis. Be smart. Right. Would you give it up, you know, stuff now for potential down the road?
You know, and one of the things, like you say, people all want to put this guy as the one and this guy. But once they finally get into the NFL, get drafted by a team and get a chance to play, then different people rise and different people fall. You know, like Mahomes last year, a lot of people weren't talking about him, and then he ends up being like the best there is. So what do you think about last year's crop of quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, Mahomes is a perfect example of how much coaching and scheme fit matter. And you look at Mahomes and what people like myself and Waldman and Ted Wynn over at The Athletic were saying about him. Look, we were believers in him, but we all sort of realized that it's going to take the right coach, because if you drop him into Los Angeles, the Rams, with Jeff Fisher, it's going to be a train wreck. You know, it's kind of like what we saw with Jared Goff. And so similar to Kyler Murray this year, you're going to need a quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, head coach, an entire organization willing to think outside the box and to sort of expand what they're doing and tailor the offense to him, and rather than trying to fit him into what the offense is currently doing. And so when you look at sort of evaluating quarterbacks, don't forget how important that sort of scheme fit and coaching landing spot and all that stuff matters. And we saw it a little bit play out this year. And, you know, you look at Baker Mayfield and the start that he had to his career, and he was good. But then when Freddie Kitchens took over and they sort of sat down with Baker and said, what do you want to run, and opened the playbook up a bit, you saw that offense sort of take off. And so, you know, they made the smart decision, I think, turning that over to Freddie, given what we saw from him. And so I'm really excited about Baker and where that offense is trending. And I think with the pieces that got in place, the Kareem Hunt addition is another interesting thing to think about. That offense looks to be trended in the right direction. So I'm all in on Baker right now. I'm in on Sam Darnold as well. That's a team that has a ton of cap space. He had an incredible sort of – after he came back from that injury, he looked fantastic. And even, you know, that late game against the Patriots in the last half of the season, he looked pretty good in that game against a defense that won the Super Bowl. And so Sam Darnold, with the cap space that they have and some of the moves that they've made, I kind of like where they're going. So I'm in on those two guys. Josh Allen was a quarterback I did not like. He was out of the five first-rounders. He was QB5 for me. Wasn't a huge fan of him. That being said, he surpassed my admittedly, you know, crater-like low expectations. And so I think, you know, cautiously optimistic might be how I'd put it with him. I think that there's potential there. And plus you get a little bit of the athleticism in the running, which is something that translated to the game and to the NFL game better than I expected to. So while I'm, you know, really excited about the first two, cautiously optimistic with him. Cautiously optimistic about Josh Rosen as well. I think they need to get him some help. Now, obviously, we're all wondered what Cliff is going to do. Now, people are saying, making the connections between his agent, Murray's agent, are they going to go 1-1? I don't see that happening, because when you look at how Cliff got that job, he was the only one that walked into Arizona and had a game plan with film and everything, how we're going to fix Josh Rosen. That's how he got that job. Yeah. He was hired to fix Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen was my favorite quarterback in last year's class. So again, I put it in the cautiously optimistic, but less so than Josh Allen because of the external factors. They got to get him help. And you figure they're probably going Bosa with that first pick. If they don't draft Kyler Murray, they don't do something crazy, or they don't trade down. So they're going to address defense first. So you want to see the kind of pieces they put in. You know, so watch what they do via free agency, make some additions, because, you know, I could list you guys some wide receivers that were on that roster, and they sound like Madden-generated names. Like,
they do.
So, you know, again, see what help they give them. Lamar is such an interesting case. I liked him.
Everybody likes to talk about him.
But you see how they used him. You see what they were able to do with him. And granted, he had some QB1 type weeks where he, you know, cracked the top 12 or so because of the rushing yardage and stuff like that. But when you see, you know, how far he seems like he still has to go, you see how two games in particular ended, that Chiefs game, that Chargers game, where he was slow, didn't get the ball out of his hands when he needed to, strip sacks to end it. He needs to speed things up. Now, could he have that big type year one to year two leap that we often see, and stats bear this out? I forget who just studied it, whether it was Ben Baldwin or Josh Hermsmeyer. Somebody just did an EPA analysis of QBs from years one to years two and three, and you see that jump on EPA from year one to year two. He could have that kind of leap and really sort of help himself. But I'm just, while I like him, I'm not sure about fantasy sort of, you know, as a fantasy asset, whether he's going to really have the types of weeks we saw, or if teams are going to kind of have him figured out and he's going to struggle to put up consistent production next year. And so that's kind of where I am on those guys.
Well, what should the coaching staff be doing for Lamar Jackson? Like, what type of offense should they be running? And besides, you know, running him until he collapses and gets murdered on the field.
Right.
Either last year.
And that's exactly, Shane, what they had to do last year, because they weren't ready to sort of make the transition to him. They had to. And so they were like, all right, well, we'll just run him 33 times against the Bengals in his first start, because we know that should work. And if he gets hurt, well, we've got RG3, I guess. I mean, I think that was their game plan. When I sort of studied Lamar, you know, I saw somebody that was suited for either something like kind of the Patriots offense. You know, it's more timing and rhythm, a lot of short, quick throws, slants, screens, smokes, you know, pivot routes, option routes, some timing routes to the boundary. You know, he's not really a vertical-based passer for the most part. He has the arm to do it, but it doesn't fit his skill set the best. So something like, you know, a West Coast hybrid type thing where the Eagles run, for example, or with the Patriots run, whether it's slash of West Coast and Ern Perkins, that's the kind of offense that would work for him. You know, something where it's getting the ball out of his hands quickly with some easier defined read, so he's not having to process and diagnose and decipher too much of what the defense is doing, because that's when it got to be a problem for him. When they got into those situations where they had to push it downfield, they had to get those chunk plays, he's not there yet. And so that's when you saw him holding the ball too long, trying to diagnose what the defense was doing, and that's when it got him into trouble. And so that's what I think you need to move him. Now, will they do that? That's the big question.
I don't even know who their OC is right now. I'm drawing a complete blank.
I mean, I think they stuck with Marty, right?
Jesus. Okay. That makes sense. That's but I don't think. Morning Wigley with the Eagles for a little bit after.
No, it's Greg Roman.
Oh, okay. Greg
Roman. And he was the guy that was working with Vic and stuff. So, I mean, I expect that he's going to have that, you know, extra year in the system. You know, now he's going to approach it with Flacco gone, which certainly helps from a mental standpoint, because look, you know, not that I was any good, but like, you know, when I was playing with a quarterback looking over my shoulder, I played worse than I did. And so, you know, you remove that aspect to it. I think it will help him. Another year in the system, I think you could see that sort of leap. But I'm more excited about the other guys.
Do you do you find it amazing or alarming that so many NFL teams in this day and age still try to plug guys into like a set way of playing, a set system, instead of tailoring offenses to like Baker Mayfield, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, seeing offenses really drive their teams through, you know, the leader of their offense or quarterback's skill set, talents.
Yeah,
and it just seems like any good business person would be like, you know what? We've got to recognize our strengths here. We've got to draw upon our strengths. I mean, what's going on in the NFL that these guys are just so rigid and ruining quarterbacks that can be successful, or, you know, just not leading the team forward? I don't get it.
Yeah, Jeremy, it's a fascinating question. And I think we're seeing that sort of scale tip right in front of our eyes. And I think, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we're going to look back at the Watsons, the Mahomes, you know, whether it's Baker, and realize that shift, that paradigm shift was happening. We were just living through that moment. We couldn't quite see it because, you know, what makes the world go round after all? It's money, right? And so you look at, for example, out of the 12 playoff teams this year, 7 of them had a quarterback on his rookie deal. You know, the others, you know, the other 5, they had one of the elite guys, whether it's a Brady or a Rivers or a Luck, you know, or Russell Wilson, who was the original model for getting that quarterback on his rookie deal, being competitive enough with him, getting competent play out of him, and then adding all the pieces you can and making a run, right? And so you saw the Eagles do that with Wentz, you saw the Rams do that with Goff. And so NFL teams are starting to realize that, look, if you can get just competent play from your rookie quarterback, it doesn't have to be great. Look at Trubisky this year. You can still load up and make a run and maximize that window. And then if he's good enough, then you're going to have to pay him. But fine, you hope at that point he's developed enough that you can be successful paying him a big-time contract.
And yeah, so it's worth it at that point.
That 3-year developmental window we used to look at with quarterbacks, that's gone. Forget it. I've got a piece that's going to be coming out in the Pro Football Weekly Draft magazine where I talk to a bunch of people around the league, quarterback coaches, other analysts, and Matt Bowen, for example, and they basically said, look, you know, if I'm an NFL offensive coordinator, I am getting a rookie quarterback in, I am getting his college playbook, and I'm copying that, because we don't have time to train the guy to run our stuff. We have to get competitive with him as he is right now. We can't develop him. We can't fix him unless you get an Andrew Luck to fall in your lap. You've got to get your rookie quarterback competent quickly. And the best way to do that is to run what they were running. And so we are seeing this paradigm shift now where you're going to see with these guys that come out, you know, whoever drafts Haskins, they're going to be running the Ohio State's offense. Whoever drafts Murray, they're going to call up Lincoln Riley and say, look, how do we get this to work? And so that's what you have to do, because you can't wait. If you wait 3 years to get the guy up to speed on your offense, you've wasted 3 of the 5 years of that quarterback rookie deal. They're out the window. And so what have you accomplished? Nothing. So you can get competitive quickly if you get the guy running what he's comfortable with. And we're going to see more and more of that as we go down this new CBA. Now, that being said, with the new CBA looming, that might change. And so maybe 3 years from now, it's completely different. But right now, that's what these guys have to do to get competent quarterback play out of their rookies.
What about landing spot is huge. It just, I mean, like every other position we think about in fantasy football, now it's quarterback too.
What about the teams right now that are looking ahead, like you say, the ones that are going to wait till next year's rookie class? So in the meantime, they're going to take some of the guys that are bouncing around like Nick Foles, or they're talking about Eli Manning being traded maybe to the Dolphins, or all these kind of guys like Jacksonville doesn't want to go with Blake Bortles. Are there any of these players you mentioned, RG3, there people talk about Teddy Bridgewater, are there any of these guys that should be going to one of these teams to start in the meantime to wait for next year, or do you not like any of these quarterbacks bouncing around?
I mean, a couple of moves I'm expecting to see happen. Again, no inside information. This is just gut feeling here. But Foles to Jacksonville, I think, makes a lot of sense because, you know, they're still a competent enough team on the defensive side of the ball, with the pieces that they have, that they just need somebody that can at least run an offense.
Right.
You know, and so frankly, they could get me, and I'd probably be a little bit better than Blake Bortles. So, you know,
but yeah,
Foles,
sure,
I think, makes some sense there. You know, I come back to the idea of, look, we're now going to see Keenum on the outside looking in. In Denver. And so Miami might make some sense for a Case Keenum type offense, you know, because they're definitely sort of tanking until next year. But they bring Chad O'Shea in, you know, so you're going to be running sort of a facsimile of New England's offense. I think that's something that Case Keenum could run somewhat competently, you know, to at least get you to 2020. And then you address the quarterback situation that way. I think New Orleans is looking at Bridgewater as their guy post Drew Brees, even though the Taysom Hill situation is there.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he just stays there. Jacoby Brissett is a name I'm interested in the sense that he's been a competent quarterback. He's taken on a leadership role with Indianapolis. You know, when they had that horrific start, they call the players only meeting, and he was the driving force behind that. And so you saw what he did in New England. You saw how he stepped into an awful situation 2 years ago, basically, in Indianapolis when he was traded right before the season and played pretty well. And so if I were a GM that needed a quarterback and didn't like this class, I would see what it would take and might take more than you're willing to pay. You know, but when you're looking at drafting, say, Drew Lock at 10 or giving up a third round pick for Jacoby Brissett,
right,
I'd probably go with Jacoby Brissett. Eli Manning and the Giants are interesting because, you know, Gettleman's an old school guy. And so he's probably going to hand on to Eli, make one last run, and maybe punt this to 2020. And it seems so strange to think about because they were sitting there at two and they had every quarterback but Baker staring in the face. And now this year they're there at six. It's hard to think that they were going to draft now Kyler Murray. I know they're out on Kyler Murray. If you're doing a mock draft, just don't waste your time mocking Murray to the Giants. This is not going to happen. Gettleman's not going to do that. Yeah. Haskins might be the guy they would do it for, but I've heard that they're out on kind of the rest of the guys. And so don't be surprised if for the first time ever, Gettleman just trades back, stockpiles some more assets, let somebody come up to six to get ahead of Jacksonville, knowing that Jacksonville might be in on a quarterback. And then they make one last run on Eli, and then they're in the 2020 train. You know, they kind of like Lauletta in a sense. They might go with another day three pick and see if they can strike some developmental magic there. But I think Gettleman's going to be out on this quarterback group.
I don't think Gettleman's smart enough or savvy enough to trade back. I think he'll make whatever.
He'll probably sit there, Shane, and just take best player available. That's what he does.
Yeah. Based off his past history, it's just not something he does unless someone gets in his ear and they're like, look, Dave, this guy's going to be around in 10 draft spots, please trade back. Just trade back. It just makes the call for him.
It is funny to think that somebody that's in such a powerful position can't learn from his mistakes and do a different thing. What do you think about Blake Bortles and Tannehill? Are they going to end up having any kind of career with somebody else, or are they both finished?
You know, one thing that I've been sort of kicking around in the old cranium would be Tannehill going to Arizona. You know, because I think you would fit in that kind of offense and would give Cliff sort of a safe option behind Rosen because, you know, Cliff is brought there to sort of fix Josh Rosen and make him good. And sometimes what you have to do with younger quarterbacks, and we saw it with two rookies last year, sit him down. Now, Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, they were injury situations, but you saw both of those players come back from injury and fare much better because sometimes when you're trying to learn on the fly, things just get sped up much too fast. And you need a little chance to sort of sit down, catch your breath, watch from the sidelines, and then go back in and sort of fix the mistakes. And so, you know, Tannehill is a potential sort of veteran presence in the locker room behind Rosen in an offense that I think would be tailored to some of what he does. Makes some sense to me. As for Bortles, I don't know, man. I mean,
nobody knows.
How many articles have been written every offseason that, oh, this is the year he's fixed his mechanics. Oh, this is the year he's fixed up that throwing motion. And then we see him in August and it looks great. And then he gets his first preseason game and it looks great. And then week one starts and he's a trebuchet again. I mean, it's just not good. And so maybe a change of scenery helps, but I just can't envision a situation where he's going to step into an environment and be drastically improved and sort of improve the quarterback room. Maybe there is a spot for him. I mean, I don't know. Just throw some spaghetti at the wall. New England, okay? I mean, maybe there's a situation where he steps in and just sits back and watches for a year or two, and then some magical Bill Belichick pixie dust fixes everything. Right. Even I don't see that happening. So Bortles is just – I don't know. I'm sure some team's going to give him an option, you know, some sort friendly shot, but – I'm not betting on Blake Bortles anytime soon.
Nothing, no hopes for Tyrod, huh? Tyrod Taylor.
From what I've been told, I mean, you know, if sort of the Keenum to Miami thing doesn't work out, that might be a spot for him, Miami. I've been told that Cleveland likes him in having him behind Baker.
That's right,
and he sort of handled the transition to Baker Mayfield incredibly well. He and Baker seem to be close. Now, whatever that was just made up for the cameras on Hard Knocks or what, we don't know. But it seems like, look, they kind of like him. You need two quarterbacks in today's NFL because if guy number one goes down, you need somebody to step in. And so I'd imagine him finding a way to stick around in Cleveland. But that Miami situation might be an interesting one. Jacksonville could be another situation that would work, you know, depending on what Foles does and how they move him. If something crazy happens and Gettleman says, look, get me that Foles guy, and we see Foles go to the Giants, then you might see Tyrod sort of slide into that Foles spot we had carved out in Jacksonville.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, I know you're a Patriots fan, and I don't know if we need to keep this in the show, but I plan on asking you if – you know, the Patriots were to make a move in this, you know, not ideal, maybe quarterback class to get the guy that's going to succeed, become the successor for Brady. Who would you want out of the guys in this class if you had to pick?
If you're putting me into sort of that Bill Belichick mind frame, which is something I've tried to do and failed miserably at, I will say, because that's a scary place to put yourself. The quarterback I'm coming to, there are two that we haven't even talked about yet. There's Ryan Finley from NC State, and there's Brett Rippon from Boise State. Because the Patriots sort of have that sort of old school mentality when it comes to quarterback play, where they sort of go by the Parcells rules. And we've taken the Parcells rules and cast them aside because nobody sticks around anymore. So you can't get the magic number of starts, magic number of wins, and things like that. But those two guys check all seven of those boxes. Joe Marino over at the Draft Network actually put all these quarterbacks under the Parcells rules test. And those were the only two that checked all seven boxes. Oh, cool. You look at Finley and what he does, the time and rhythm throws, those anticipation type throws, accurate in the short area. I think he kind of fits with what they like to do. And as for Brett Rippon, I've been writing about this kid since he was a freshman. I love this kid.
Yeah,
and he's going to end up being like in my top five quarterbacks. Just not, I'm not sure if it's four or five yet, because I'm not done with all these guys, but I really like him. Even his worst game this year, San Diego State, he did some stuff that you saw NFL quarterbacks unable to do, college quarterbacks won't do, adjusting the protections, you know, changing the, you know, sliding the protection around, making audibles, making throws when the blitzes weren't picked up, getting hit in the face and still sticking it in the out route to move the chains on a 3rd and 10. I really like this kid. Now, the NFL seemingly doesn't like him as much as I do. It seems like there's a growing consensus in sort of the evaluation community that Brett Rippon is one of the better quarterbacks in this group. He didn't get a Senior Bowl invite. You know, he was pretty good down in Shrine from everything I've been told. I think that either NFL teams aren't high on him as much as we are, or maybe NFL teams are all sort of hoping that he slides under the radar, because we've seen that before where they try to say, oh yeah, don't invite that guy, and then come draft day he's suddenly like coming off the board at 54 and we're all like, where do you get from?
You let Pats take him in a second.
Brett Rippon is a quarterback that if you're in a deep devy league, watch where he lands and plan accordingly, because if he goes to an offense that sort of fits what he does, like New England. Well, I mean, we all know that Belichick players get drafted anyway, but still, just watch this kid. Do your homework on him because I like him.
Well, Mark, I would like to thank you very much for coming on and discussing all these quarterbacks with us. Typically, one of the things we talk about on the show are some trades that listeners have asked us and people have sent us on Twitter. And we do have a quarterback trade involved. So we thought maybe we'd like to hear you're like rubbing your hands together. We'd like to hear your opinion on the trade. We have a trade here where it was Jimmy Garoppolo and the 109 for Lamar Jackson. And Shane's laughing, but your head just popped up behind your microphone. What do you think about that trade right there?
Look, I get Lamar Love, and I get the production that we saw from him at the tail end of last season. We talked about him, and he put up some QB1 type weeks with the running stats and things like that. When you're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo in a Kyle Shanahan offense plus the 109, I mean, if I were the person holding the bar in that situation and I was able to get Jimmy Garoppolo and the 109, sure. Side note. I mean, because look, having studied Shanahan's playbook, having talked to a quarterback, Jared Stidham, that ran that offense for a week, and the giddiness in his laugh and the twinkle in his eye when he was just getting done running the Kyle Shanahan offense, yeah, give me that guy in the 109.
Shane, what are you thinking about that? I'm looking at your face.
No, it's just that this is the one of those trades that was on 46 different podcasts because we're all, you know, related to each other, basically. I think
it's a team I made, actually. I got Jimmy G in the 109 for Lamar Jackson, but it blew up on Twitter, which was kind of funny. I didn't expect that, but it did. And I think it was 90% were in the same corner as you, Mark, and they definitely wanted the Jimmy G side.
I love the fact that you didn't think it would blow up. I just think that's hilarious.
I don't think anyone except for Stompy, who you made the trade with, I think. I don't think anyone that side. Like, even to the various podcasts, like, we could ask, I think it should be a running thing, just from now to the beginning.
Just ask everybody.
Or at least until the draft, everyone that comes on, just poll it and see how it goes.
Well, thank you.
Wrote an article about it afterward.
Let me get Mark's thoughts on out of left field. But since we brought it up, Jimmy G, assuming he's back healthy this year, what do we think he can do or can be?
I mean, I think he can be a top 10 quarterback in this league. I think this is an offense that is tailor made for him with the quick release, the accuracy, and the short and intermediate areas of the field. Kyle Shanahan isn't brilliant offensive mind, and we saw what we did with Matt Ryan. We saw what he did this year with Nick Mullins. I mean, we saw what he did with George Kittle. I mean, there are going to be aspects to this offense that are going to be that much better with Jimmy Garoppolo. He's got such a quick release, and he's so devilishly handsome. I just had to throw that in as well. And
I think that really is.
I mean, I think if he's healthy, you know, with the pieces you can know that they're going to put around him, I think he's going to put up some huge numbers when he's back healthy. And so, yeah, I'm all aboard the Jimmy G trade. I mean, look, it was heartbreaking when the Patriots traded him. I understand why they did it, you know, but as a Pats guy, it was like, look, you knew what was getting away. It was a guy that's going to go on and be a great quarterback in this league. And so, provided he's healthy in that offense, I think sky's the limit kind of situation.
I mean, as a Patriots fan, now you don't need to worry because Tom Brady apparently will never stop playing football. So
no, I mean, it's gonna be the end of the world is gonna come, and it's gonna be Tom Brady playing catch with Keith Richards. That's all the cockroaches.
It's true, man. Like, he doesn't even that's look what's gonna close be to left. His
age. I know it's crazy, guys. I'm 6 months older than him. Okay, I can't get out of bed without a 30-minute lead up because my back is killing me, and he's out there like eating avocado ice cream and you know kissing his dad on the lips, and he's just planning forever. I just don't get it. I'm gonna start eating his diet and you know kissing my dad on the lips, and maybe that's the secret to it all. I don't know.
I love there was that picture of him with a long beard saying Super Bowl MVP 2040 or whatever the hell it was.
And there was that other like video or meme of like him beating RG4 in like, Super Bowl 68 or something.
RG4.
Yeah,
I never saw that one, but that's hilarious.
That's amazing.
Someone put out a picture of Kenny Stabler at the same age.
Oh yeah,
and
Stabler. I mean, obviously, look, that man lived hard. But,
yeah.
Whew, yeah.
He was doing lines right before the game started.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, we don't know that. That's like people say
yes,
that.
Yes, we
so,
do.
But
he's not listening. And if he is, you can get in touch with our lawyers for the slander.
But. Yeah, that's allegedly. What people say. Allegedly. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. It was very informative, and all this quarterback talk was really awesome. And we'd love to have you on. Is there anything you want to say before you go?
Thanks, guys, for having me on. This was a blast. You know, just be smart when you're trying to acquire assets for next year's draft. These quarterbacks, they don't always develop the same way we'd like them to. So just be smart. If you get a good price and you're willing to take the risk, fine. But look, don't mortgage the future for Tua. He might not even come out. Mm. So just saying that. Guys, it's been a blast. Enjoy it. Keep doing the great work you're doing.
Thank you so much. Mark.
We love you, man. Take care, brother.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you.
Great. And now let's hear from the Scouting Academy.
Scout NFL football like a pro. Invest in yourself and get a degree in player evaluation and assessment from the Scouting Academy. They've educated NFL GMs, personnel directors, and dozens of NFL scouts. Enroll today and you'll watch the same game tape NFL coaches watch. You'll learn to look past the metrics with position-by-position analysis. This is a time-tested curriculum, a chance to learn from the NFL execs and coaches. Sign up today and get a Dynasty Football Factory exclusive discount for a limited time only. Save $50 when you sign up at DynastyFootballFactory.com.
Scouting Academy, that's great stuff. It's a good season for it. It's scouting season, right? This is when your rookie drafts are coming up. So jump on the site. Hit the cool little promo link thing there and save yourself money on the next registration. Real quick, though, like I think I mentioned earlier, it was a while ago, I know, I got three startup drafts going on. So you know what you're supposed to do up after a startup, right?
Trade?
Drink a beer?
Well, okay, yes, to both of those, but that's actually not the correct answer. The answer I was looking for is go on rotoassurance.com.
Oh yes, you're right. Yeah, to check your players that you just drafted.
You better get a policy on your player, right?
Exactly. You're drafting this team, you're like, holy shit, here's the championship squad for at least the next 6 years. At least, that's how I feel about a couple of these teams. I don't want to go overboard. Just six, not seven. But look, injuries happen. If you want to protect yourself against that, go on rotoassurance.com. You want to use the Dynasty Trades HQ, all caps, and get 20% off your player insurance. So that's like paying like one-fifth of – no, that's the opposite. They pay one-fifth. So you're basically
right, – right.
Yeah, you get one-fifth of the price off just because you listen to this show. And that's pretty cool. So rotoassurance.com, you want to use the code Dynasty Trades HQ.
All caps.
The main reason I'm laughing is I think was it last week somebody in our Patreon chat, which we do. We have like a specific chat for the Patreons. Somebody said we need to title one of our episodes Shane Knows Math. And I just thought, it was
a lie.
And every week,
special episode of Dynasty Trades HQ today, Shane learns math.
And it is true. I mean, we always end up having some kind of situation where Shane kind of figures out math. But you know, I think Mark was an awesome guest tonight. That really,
Mark was amazing. I love that guy.
You know, especially for people that are out there trying to figure out what to do with their picks. You know, Shane, it's funny. I didn't mention it when Mark was talking, but you know, last week you were saying, oh, no question that Kyle Murray would be the 1.01 if he goes to the Giants. But the way Mark said it, I don't think he'd be close to the 1.01.
I think probably NFL GMs want Haskins more based on the size and the ability. I'm not saying Kyler Murray can't make a ton of plays, and I like him. I don't think his size is going to be the deciding factor on whether he's a pro quarterback or not. But there are so many other factors. And the one piece of advice I want to give the people that play Dynasty football is don't follow just people that play Dynasty football. Don't follow just experts that play Dynasty football and listen to podcasts. You have to listen to people who actually are just football scouts.
Yep.
Mark Schofield's one of them. There are all kinds of them. Matt Waldman, guys who watch football for a living and decipher it and take that input and factor it into what you're doing, because the stuff that they have to say matters. It really does. Another guy that I really like a lot is Dane Brugler out of the Cleveland area. I've been following him I've been reading his stuff for like 10 years, even before I was on Twitter and in Dynasty Leagues. Amazing stuff. Follow football guys that know their stuff. Pick a few and do that, because you're going to get great advice from them that fantasy football people are not going to give you, and you're going to get insight that really matters, and it's going to make a difference. You're going to draft Michael Thomas over a lot of other bad players like I did, because those people that I follow know more about football than the fantasy football guys who were all over the kid that plays for the Minnesota Vikings and has done nothing since. I'm just saying, it matters. Pay attention to those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've had a good lineup of people the last couple of weeks as our guests.
Oh, man. Do you want to tell people who we're going to have soon? Oh, sorry.
No, that's awesome.
Our guest today, but we're going to have some fucking amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, we've got a great lineup. The off season is definitely the most fun for doing the show and for listening to the show. And
you know what it is? It's like when people meet your wife and they're like, "Oh, you're hitting above average here," and you're like, "I don't even understand what that means, you fucking doofus." And then someone explains it to you later, and you're like, "I should have punched him in the throat," but.
I didn't mean it like that exactly. No. I was just saying that you really
what we're doing. We're hitting
married up. Average.
Well, actually,
on our guests list here.
Yeah, actually, my wife and I met Shane's wife, and he definitely hit above what he should have hit. But
a low 240s hitter, and I'm definitely hitting at least.
Yeah, she was pretty awesome. But yeah, we do. We have some great guests coming up. We have
real quick, one thing that you know, I thought it was interesting, not just to quarterbacks, though, how Mark was talking about, you know, in Devy leagues, is you look at these guys and you think, oh, they're going to be studs. And then, you know, if you think about guys like Simi Cobbs and Fatboy Auden Tate, just as two recent examples, those are both guys that at one point were really highly thought of as Devy.
Yeah, they were.
And it just didn't turn out.
Same with the quarterbacks, though. The point he made is great because, like, if you just dip into when you do your Devy drafts, go for guys that you think are good. Because the same thing happened with me, Mitch Trubisky. I knew him because he played at Mentor in Ohio, went to North Carolina, had some decent, you know, he did okay. And so I drafted him and I got lucky with that. I got lucky with other players too, Brett Rypien. I mean, you just go for guy. I mean, why not? Don't just go by lists that somebody else made. Go draft players like Kareem Hunt that you know something about, that you like, that you know. And you know what? Magic happens. You get Kareem Hunt, Mitch Trubisky, Brett Rypien, who apparently Mark Schofield thinks is going to be a good pro quarterback, even though a lot of people don't even talk about him.
Yeah, or
go for the guys you like.
Or do Devy like I do, and you get those Devy players, you see that the people that are drooling over the guys, and you trade them for players that are playing now. Because you never f***ing know whether those Devy guys are ever going to do anything.
I still have some on my deep Devy roster.
No, you know, I know.
At least where you have like 20 or 30 Devy players, I mean, you're going to have these players. And, you know, so you have to use your own sort of valuations. You can't just use secondary research. I mean, you're not going to watch tape on everybody. So the guys you know that are close to you, just draft them. Don't be silly.
You know, what's funny is, you know, it's getting near NFL draft season. So I'm just looking at some of the Devy players on my roster. And on the one team, we drafted the Devy players 2 years ago. And I swear to God, I thought I hit a home run. I got Stephen Carr and Bryce Love. And now I don't even know if either of those dudes are getting drafted.
And that's the league where I traded some freshman Devy guy last, you know, for Sammy Watkins, I think it was. But yeah, you know, there's a lot going on with all that. And it is true. There's so much information and so many resources and so many things that you can do, and you know, get all that information, think about it all, but still make your own choices, make your own decisions, have fun playing fantasy, whether it's Devy or whatever it is. Just have fun playing it. That's all I ever end up doing is have fun.
Exactly.
So,
and look, I got a message for the kids because I keep leaving messages for the kids. Apparently,
I'm sorry, but my kids are not allowed to listen to you. My wife said so. You're not talking about like my kids, right? You're just like younger than us.
Or mine. Yeah, no. Mine aren't allowed to listen to me.
Well,
either.
Mine's 15, so I let him listen to Shane, so that's fine.
You know, everyone else is jumping off the bridge. Doesn't mean it's a bad idea, you know?
It could be a fine idea, depending on the context.
You let them jump first. That's
context matters.
Never mind. I take it back that Junior can listen to Shane. Forget it.
Let the other kids jump first and see what happens. And then decide if you're going to jump.
If it works out well, you might want to do it too.
Okay, we're way off the rails. Let's wrap this all up because we've had a great show. We've had a lot of information. There's too much information for everybody to think about. So why don't we just say thank you so much for listening. Check out our Twitter account at Dynasty Trades HQ. Send us your trade questions, your polls. Or Shane, you want to tell everybody about our Patreon account?
Yeah, we have.
Well, I want to tell everybody about our Patreon account.
Oh.
I'm going to say one thing.
Do it.
You need to become a patron, and I don't think you're necessarily doing us any special favors. You pay a couple bucks. The reason you need to become a patron is because of this podcast, number one, the special podcast we do for people not safe for work, after hours. Shane goes nuts. We take him right off the leash and let him run. But also, the content that we provide to you and the opportunities that you have are worth every penny. Ask around, talk to other patrons. We'll give you the list. You have to become a patron of the HQ to experience the whole thing, to be immersed in this. You got to do it.
Go ahead, Shane. Just while we were taping, just got a new one. And I'm going to go ahead and add my homie to the – oh, this is hilarious. I'm sorry. Train of thought. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm sorry. A couple things different going on here at once. Okay, you know, sensory overload. So,
oh, my God. One at a
time. So we just got a new patron as we were taping the show, and I'm going to go ahead and send him the link to the GroupMe chat, which is one of my favorite things because it's just – you know, we talk a lot.
Yeah, that GroupMe chat. Every time I look at my phone, it says 100 plus messages.
You know what, guys? I'm going to say one more thing. I know we haven't decided exactly how we're going to handle this, but we have said that we want to do a Patreon specific, a league for our patrons. And I know we have like a lot of patrons now, so it's not going to be a simple like 12 team league. We'd have to have like two 12 conference copies, something fun like that. Simple though, straightforward scoring, whatever, but we have to honor our patrons by doing a special league like that. And I'll commission it so Sipes doesn't have to be, I think he commissions like 150,000 leagues.
Or at least 12, but yes.
I'll do it. It'll be a double copy. Everybody has their own team, so the three of us don't have to try to manage the same team. either a double or a triple copy. Seriously, 24 or 36 teams where we're all involved. And let's just think about it. Let's talk about it.
All right. I will say this. It's February, so thank God we have plenty of time to figure it out. So,
I think it'll be fun.
Yes, great.
So, I just wanted to give a shout out to listener guy I'm friends with on Twitter. Cool guy. He's always making avis and what do you call those? The artwork for the leagues.
Yeah, graphics for banners and league. Yeah, leagues.
Are they really called avis though? I
don't know what they're called, man. But go look at my
avatars
Twitter.
Avatars and banners.
Yes. Yeah.
If you look at my banner, avatar, profile pictures, all those things, whatever. I don't know. He just redid mine and he actually made this amazing helmet for Dynasty Trades HQ. But you can check him out. He does great work. He's at Red Hawks FF. Dude's name is Jeff. Just really wanted to give him a shout out because the work is stellar.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, it is amazing. Really awesome. And I'll hit you up after the show too because I want that helmet. That Dynasty Trades HQ helmet is awesome. So yeah, thanks, Jeff.
So definitely come become a patron because it's awesome. It's cool. And you guys are like family to me, the patrons.
Shane, you post a lot of stuff that you don't send anywhere else or say anywhere else. A lot of your thoughts, you post on the patron account. And it's only for those guys.
I love that Jeremy like stepped on him shitting on our regular listeners. That was great. So and that's great. You fixed it because he was about to say something about the regular listeners.
No, I love the regular listeners, you know, and so we're about to go do a patron episode now.
Yes.
We're not going anywhere to do it. We're actually just ending this show and then starting right here.
Well, actually, you go and sit on your stoop and smoke a cigarette. But
like the things that we just discussed and I let it soak in is what I do. I don't know what you do.
Well, listen, I think
you do. You reminisce.
All three of us are talking. I mean, we're just kind of all over the place, but listen, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much, Mark Schofield, for being on the show. Yes, we love you guys. We hope you'll listen to us next week and we'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Hi, family.
Say hi to your mom.
Oh,
God. Goodbye.